Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
For astronaut Ron Garan, living on the International Space Station was a powerful, transformative experience, one that he believes holds the key to solving our problems here on Earth. It gave him what he calls the orbital perspective. In his new book, The Orbital Perspective, Lessons in Seeing the Big Picture from a Journey of 71 Million Miles, Garan conveys what it was like learning to work with a diverse group of people in an environment only a handful of human beings have ever known. Again, the name of the book is The Orbital Perspective, and we welcome astronaut Ron Garan to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Very nice to have you here. When did you come to this idea of the orbital perspective and start to define that?
Yeah, I don't think it happened in a moment. There wasn't like an epiphany and angels started singing and trumpets and all that. I think it was, I kind of describe it as an epiphany in slow motion. It came from the context of spending many months in space. I spent about a half a year all total in space and having that perspective and having that vantage point to view the Earth from. But although there were moments that I think in the context of those months in space that really helped cement that, there was a couple that we could talk about if you want. But I think it was a evolution that occurred over many months.
I guess this is probably the understatement of the year, but it's impossible to do what you did and not be forever changed by it, right?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for others. I think it's obvious that my perspective has changed. I shouldn't say changed. I should say expanded, maybe, or confirmed. You know, I don't think that, you know, I went to space and all of a sudden I had different beliefs. I had different philosophies. I think I still have the same beliefs and philosophies I launched with. I just think that they were kind of reinforced by the experience of seeing the planet from that perspective.
How much is it seeing the planet from that perspective and the job that you were there to do and working with these individuals under these very often harrowing circumstances?
Well, I think it was both. I think that, you know, you put a group of people in this particular case, people that are citizens of different nations around the world, and you put them in this very, very unique environment with this unique perspective, and, you know, it can't help but be part of the equation. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me from my time in space is what I call a sobering contradiction between the beauty of our planet on one hand and the unfortunate realities of life on our planet for a significant number of its inhabitants on the other hand. And that really is undeniable when you see that from space, when you look at how beautiful our planet is, but you think about what's going on at the microscopic level of the view that you have. You know, it really left me with a call to action, a call to try and nudge our global society along on a trajectory that hopefully will take us on a better path, hopefully reduce that contradiction between the beauty of our planet and life on our planet.
Your launch was in 2008, and I'm curious as to where we were in the space program and what we knew about your mission and ultimately what you knew about what was going to be accomplished in the long-term goal of that mission.
So there's two missions, and I bring that up because they really were very different. My first mission was in 2008, and I launched on Space Shuttle Discovery. It was a two-week construction mission to the International Space Station. We brought up and installed the Japanese laboratory. And then I launched again in 2011 from Kazakhstan on a Russian rocket, a Soyuz spacecraft with two Russian military officers as crewmates, as a fully integrated member of a Russian crew. And over the years that elapsed between those two missions, you know, I got to see the space station come to its completion and its construction and full utilization of the space station and the science really kick off, the scientific research that's being conducted on board. And again, I got to be a part of this really big international effort, and it was an amazing thing to be a part of.
You talk a lot about in the book about those partnerships and working together and trying to figure things out of how you can take that experience and, again, through that orbital perspective and bring it home so that we can work through the many problems that we have here on Earth.
When did you start to make that connection, those connections, and say, okay, well, here's how we can apply what we did?
Well, one of the big tenets of the book is this idea that you don't have to be in orbit to have the orbital perspective. I used to say that. I don't believe that's true anymore. I actually think you do have to be in orbit to have an orbital perspective, but the good news is we are all in orbit, riding in orbit around the sun on spaceship Earth. And so if you take that into your awareness and your perspective, I think it really, this whole perspective starts to become clear. But I think, you know, one of the things that I tried to do is use the international cooperation that built the International Space Station, which is arguably the most complicated, complex structure ever built in space by 15 different nations. As we all know, some have not always been the best of friends. Some were on the opposite sides of the Cold War, opposite sides of the space race. And bring that down and put that in the context of our rapidly developing hyper-interconnected global society. And so one of the things that really dawned on me, and what I write about in the book, is how interconnected we all are. It becomes obvious from space. You really feel this sense. I know a lot of people have explained this to me and shared this with me, and I certainly felt this, where you feel connected with everybody on the planet. It's kind of strange to be disconnected from the only home you've known, but, you know, simultaneously feel connected with it. But that interconnectivity is a reality now. You know, never before in human history have we had the capability to seamlessly, economically, effortlessly collaborate and coordinate and cooperate with people all over the planet. And it's really enabling solutions to the problems that we all face through this cooperation.
You have a chapter in the book called A Web of Trust. Talk a little bit about that level of trust and what is needed, because you are, as you say, there's very disparate groups working together, and you have to come to that trust. And how can we learn from that, of finding that level of trust that allows us to move forward?
Right. I guess the personal example I could cite is, you know, I spent the first 15 years of my adult life training to fight the Russians as a Cold War warrior, if you will. And then I found myself at the foot of a rocket that was going to fly my two Russian military crewmates and I into space from this previous top secret Soviet military installation on the 50th anniversary of the first human spaceflight of Yuri Gagarin, from that same launch pad that he launched from. And so I had to trust these former enemies with my life, right? And so that is personal trust. That's organizational trust. That's trust that was built through the partnership, the international partnership that built the International Space Station. It was trust that was formed through having personal relationships and people doing what they said they were going to do. And so that's one type of trust, but that's not the only type of trust. And what's becoming more and more apparent is that we can have a level of trust that allows us to work together, that comes together, that exists just for the period of time that it's needed, that allows us to fit pieces of our global puzzle together that are leading us to solutions that don't require that deep level of personal trust that takes, you know, face-to-face contact in some cases and a lot of time to build. You know, there's, and I cite many examples in the book of people and organizations that come together that have never met, that are through the technology that we have today. And I don't mean to give the idea that I think technology is the answer to everything. It's not, but it is a tool that we can use to establish the level of trust necessary to solve the problems that are facing us all.
So give an example of that. You talk in the book about building relationships from a distance. So how is that possible, and what can we achieve with that in mind?
Yeah, one of the examples I cite is from somebody named Daria Musk, who is a singer-songwriter. And, you know, she basically played a concert on Google Plus when Google Plus first came out with their Hangout features. And she found that it was more intimate than the clubs that she was playing in New York, that she could see face-to-face the people that she was playing for. And she basically built a global audience out of this technological tool. But in addition to building a global audience, she built real friendships and real connections, and people who are not just fans, but, you know, are part of her team and part of her movement to try and spread this idea of how interconnected we all are. And I think, you know, that's a really good example. There are many examples of being able to, you know, obviously nothing replaces face-to-face interaction, but it's not economical for us to bring all the people that have pieces of the puzzle to solve a global problem, to fly them all to a specific location so that we could all, you know, work together to solve whatever problem that is we're working on. But we can, through technology, do it well enough, I think. And, you know, what Daria said is if the beauty of a musical concert can shine through and you could reach people through the algorithms, through the Internet, then a conversation is going to work just fine. And I think we're showing that over and over again, that there is a tremendous capability for us to work together without having to be in the same room.
You speak in the book, you have a chapter called Mass Collaborations. To have those collaborations, does there have to be a goal, and who sets that agenda?
Well, it depends what type of mass collaboration you're talking about. Some of the examples I cite are mass collaborations to help with crisis response, disaster management. There's the International Space Apps Challenge, which is a hackathon or a codathon, where people come together from every continent on the planet, you know, about 86 different cities around the world, to solve various problems that are facing all of us. And, you know, one of the beauties of these things and one of the powerful aspects of these type of things is that nobody is in charge. You know, people come together and they self-organize. Roles and responsibilities are assigned or assumed, not based on what degrees people have or what their background is, but where their passion is and where their motivation is. And that has proven to be a very, very effective way to arrive at solutions, and it's been proven over and over again. And we're about to have, I think it's the fourth or maybe the fifth annual International Space Apps Challenge coming up in a few weeks, and I'm going to participate in the New York City location for that, and it's a really powerful tool.
But don't you all have to agree on, I mean, you can even agree on what the problem is, but agreeing on the solution before you can assume those roles and take a whack at it?
Agree on the solution. I think most of these, and most of these exercises, most of these efforts, the solutions are not predetermined. That's the purpose of them, is to arrive at solutions. Mm. And one of the beauties of it is the spontaneous collisions that occur across disciplines. And you might have, you know, an artist working with a computer programmer, working with a marketeer, working with an engineer, and everybody looks at things from a different perspective. And because they're all been thrown together in this collaborative, creative, innovative team, solutions that nobody ever thought of can come from places we've never heard of. And I think that's one of the beauties of these type of things, is it brings together. And I failed to mention that some of these people might be in one continent, some might be on another continent, so they're bringing their own geographic and cultural perspectives to the problem-solving process as well. And I think what comes out of that is a very rich solution set, if you will, that then we can pick from, and we can model, and we can mold to the specific problems that we're trying to address.
So ultimately, what do you hope people get out of the story?
Well, my goal in writing the book was not to write a book. My goal was twofold. One is to share this experience, share this perspective that I've been given, this perspective that, you know, very, very few people to date, I hope that changes soon, but to date, very few people have had the opportunity to have that perspective. But to also use that perspective to, as a jump-off point, as a starting point, to open up a global conversation around this deeper level of collaboration. You know, long gone are the days where one organization, one group, one nation for that matter, could affect the type of real change that's required to keep our global trajectory on track. And I think that's what I hope comes from this book. I hope people share the story. I hope the message resonates with people. I hope they share the message, and I hope it sparks a conversation, a deep conversation, about this need to set aside our differences and work together.
Ron Guerin is the author of the new book, The Orbital Perspective, Lessons in Seeing the Big Picture from a Journey of 71 Million Miles. Ron Guerin, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I do appreciate it.
You betcha. I appreciate it.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Orbital Perspective. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.